chapter 29 in Igeres HaKodesh, the Holy Epistle. It's page 296 in the regular Tanyas. Chapter 29, HS Chayil Ateres Baala. The chapter begins with a quotation which says, HS Chayil Ateres Baala. A woman of worth is the crown of her husband. V'chulu, etc. Now, this pasuk is taken to mean, because Eishescha refers to the wife, and in Hasidic teachings, the woman corresponds to the sphere of Malchus, and the husband corresponds to the six spheres of what's called Zazeh Rampin, which is Chesed down through to your side. And normally, in the order of the spheres, Malchus follows Zot, the Chesed to your side. But when Mashiach comes, there's going to be a turnaround, and Malchus is going to be above Zot. And this is what it says here, Eishes Chayil Ateres Baala, that a woman of worth is the crown of her husband. But the Alter Rebbe here explains in a different way. He's concentrating on the word Ateres Baala, the crown, so the diadem or crown, and he analyzes what is the concept of a crown in Jewish teachings, because certain aspects of Torah have been designated by being called the crown of Torah. So let's see what he has to say. Isa bi Gemara pei dal de Megillah. He brings in the Gemara in the fourth chapter of Megillah, Udishtamesh betaga chalof. The one that uses the crown will waste away. Ruchulum. What does this mean? What is the crown that's referred to here that is being used unlawfully, so to speak? Zeh mishtamesh b'mi sheshoina halachos. This is somebody that uses another person who is an expert in learning the laws of the Torah, which in turn are called kisa shel Torah, the crown of the Torah. So that's what it means. The one that uses the crown will waste away. The wasting away is a kind of curse, and it means that he's doing something wrong by using the crown. What is the crown? So he identifies the crown with the Talmud Chacham, the wise sage, who actually learns the laws of the Torah. And he unlawfully uses this Talmud Chacham. The Talmud Chacham, like a Kohen, but you are not allowed to just use them, because this is called a Pegimas Kavod. It's the opposite of honor. When you casually use the labor of a very honorable person, you are thereby dishonoring them. You can imagine, the queen in the palace. Yeah. You know, if somebody's shoelace is undone, they wouldn't say to the queen, "Oh, could you bend down and tie my shoelace?" You don't use another person who is a very honorable person in a way that's demeaning.
Right.
We're not allowed to be demeaning towards a kohen.
Right.
It says you're not allowed to be mishtamish b'kohen. A kohen is a priest.
Yes.
He has a special task of serving in the temple, which is an honored position.
Yeah.
So you're not allowed to just treat him in an offhand way and in a demeaning way. The same thing with the Talmud Chacham. Everyone has to have honor for a Talmud Chacham. It says, "Vadar to pnei zokin, b'pnei seva tokum." You should stand up before a hoary old man, and "Vadar to pnei zokin," you shall honor the face of a zokin. So the rabbi says, "What is a zokin? Zeshekana chachma." This refers to someone who's acquired knowledge, and that must refer to a Talmud Chacham, to a very wise person. So we're not allowed to use that person in a demeaning kind of way. So we've established that this person that is using the crown wrongly, he's using the Talmud Chacham in a demeaning way. Talmud Ve'Elyo, we also learn in the teachings of the Yeshiva Ve'Elyo, Kalashona Alochas Muftach Loi Shehu Ben Olam Haba. We say this actually every day, and according to Nusach Sfarad, we say it after Henkel Akenu. According to Nusach Ashkenaz, it's only said on Shabbos after Musaf, but Sfarad say it every day, and it's said at the end of Ein Kelekenu. So we learn in the Yeshiva Ve'Elyo, anybody that learns halachas b'chol yayim every day, muftach lo shehu ben olam haba. It's absolutely assured that this person has a place in the world to come. So that, and here again we see the halachas, the idea of halachas coming out as being something particularly important. So we have to understand. Lama nikra halachas b'shem tag of v'kisra shel Torah. So why are particularly the halachas got? Why have they acquired this name of the taga? Taga is the Aramaic word for crown. The crown of Torah. We know there are different parts of Torah. There's pshat, remez, drush, side. There's halacha. There's mishnah. There's gemara. There's Torah. The actual Tanakh. There's Panimius HaTorah, there's Musar, there's Chassidus, Kabbalah. There's all different aspects of Torah. So of all the different parts of Torah that there are, why do halachas acquire this title of the crown? The gam loma shayna halachas davka muftach loi shehu ben olam haba. And why particularly someone that learns halachas is that person assured of a place in the world to come? And not other parts of Torah. We know other parts of Torah may be even more exalted than halachas. And also, another question, we need to understand what the rabbis say in the 11th chapter of Menachos. He also says, if a person, all they learned was one chapter in the morning, one chapter in the evening, yatzide chavosa, he has fulfilled his duty. What duty is this? This is the duty of learning Torah. Now we know the duty of learning Torah applies every single moment of every single day. We say it in our evening prayers, v'agisa ba yamim v'alayla. You shall utter them, you shall, you know, murmur and utter the words of Torah, or you shall, you know, learn diligently, Yom HaLayla, day and night. Is there any measure to day and night? No, every single moment of day and night. How is it physically possible for a person to learn every moment of every day and night? Obviously, they can only be within the bounds of a person's physical capabilities. And also, what his financial demands are. So if a person has a job which keeps him concentrating on the job for a certain number of hours in the day, he can't sit and learn Torah all day. And therefore, the Torah absolves him of his obligation of learning Torah every single moment of every single day. Therefore, in what would he have to do in order to fulfill his duty of learning Torah? He would have to do something less than learning all day. What is the measure? Perek Echad Shachris, Perek Echad Arvis. One Perek in the morning, one Perek in the evening. What is this Perek? It's taken to mean Mishnayas, which is akin to learning Halacha. So then he's fulfilled his duty. But he does not fulfill his duty. So why does he not fulfill his duty of the obligation to learn Torah with other parts of Torah? Ach, mudas zayis mashkos varizal shekol adam yisol tzor lover begilgulim rabim achikayim kol tarik mitzvahs. Now, he takes a little bit of a diversion into a saying of the Arizal that every single Jew has got to come down into this world and live in this world a full life until he has fulfilled all the 613 commandments. All the Torah. The machshava dibru maisa, and he has to do that in his thought, in his speech, and in his deed. Now what does he say? He has to come in Gilgulim. What's a Gilgul? A Gilgul is a reincarnation. So why should he have to come in as a reincarnation? The answer is, very simply, that we cannot be assured that a person is going to keep the Torah in one lifetime. We know that everybody gets distracted, and we lose opportunities to learn, we lose opportunities to do a mitzvah, and it could be that a person would live his whole life and not actually fulfill all the 613 mitzvahs. So what does the Arizal say? That this person will have to come back and be reborn, the same soul, he will be reborn in a different body, and he'll be given another chance to complete the task of completing all the 613 mitzvahs and learning the whole Torah in his lifetime. And if he doesn't do it the second time round, he might have to come the third time. And if he doesn't do it the third time, he might have to come a fourth time. But we are assured that everybody will fulfill all of the 613 mitzvahs and the whole Torah in the sum total of these lifetimes. Lahashlim levushei nafshai, this is in order to complete the garments of his soul, ulasaklam, and to put them right, shleihei levusha dechaserim, in order that the levushim, his garments, should be incomplete. Now if you want an idea of what the importance of these garments is, we can always learn from something in this world when we see when the ladies are preparing for a wedding. Then if it's in their own family, then you start to see the importance of garments. Because do they put in effort to get the right garment, the right outfit, it's got to match the colors, and everything has got to be just right. And they are, you know, they know they're in the limelight, they know they're in the public eye, and they've got to get it just right. So we see that Levushim, garments, are extremely important. And the same thing applies to the garments of the soul, which are lacking if we've not done a mitzvah or not learned something in Torah. Yes?
And now you make sure that no one else has got the same outfit as them.
Absolutely. So we see how important it is. Lavad mitzvahs hatoluyas b'melach. Of course, there are certain mitzvahs which are impossible for a person to do themselves because they are circumstantial. He gives an example of a mitzvah of a king. The king has got certain laws he has to keep. So one of them is having two Sifrei Torah. So if a person is not a king and they have two Sifrei Torah, have they done a mitzvah? It's a nice thing, but they've not fulfilled the mitzvah of what a king is supposed to do. So the answer is, how do we do the mitzvah of the king? The king is maitzias. That means he does it on our behalf. In other words, if we are unable to do a mitzvah because the mitzvah doesn't apply to us, then it has to be, we have to rely on someone else to do the mitzvah for us. Now this mitzvah, this example of a king, is not the only example. There are many myriad examples of mitzvahs that you can't do, that very often a person can't do, and it's no fault of their own. So let's take an example of Pidyon Bechor, Pidyon HaBen, to redeem the firstborn son. Well, that's a mitzvah on the father to redeem his firstborn son. But what would happen if he didn't have a firstborn son? He had a firstborn daughter, and he has no firstborn son. In that case, he does not do the mitzvah of Pidyon Bechor. So how does he do the mitzvah of Pidyon Bechor? We have to say that he's yaitzah the mitzvah through someone else. Because we have the concept of arvus, which is that one Jew is responsible for another, and that gives us the ability to do a mitzvah on behalf of another person. That's like when you listen to the shofar being blown, you don't blow the shofar yourself, you hear it being blown by somebody else. So this person is being mitzi us with a mitzvah. That's because we're called aravim. That means we're guarantors one for the other, and therefore we can do a mitzvah one for the other as well. Now, so these mitzvahs, which depend on others, we have to be rely on them to be mitzias. Shu mitzi kol Yisrael. So the king is mitzi everybody with the mitzvahs that he has to do. Kihu, kihu klolis kulam. Because the king is what's called an neshama klolis. king is called the Neshama Klalis. So a Neshama Klalis means a soul that contains all the other souls of Klal Yisrael. That's why he's able to do the mitzvah on our behalf. Because within him there's something of us as well. Vatamu, kidei lahalbish kol tayag b'chines v'koichas shebenafshay achas mehena lo nedar. And the reason is, why must we all fulfill every single one of the 630 mitzvahs, is in order that we should be able to enclose all the 613 aspects of our soul, and none should be left out. So again, we get an insight into the importance of soul, of clothes, from the way the women behave when it comes to a simcha. They've got to have absolutely everything that's required, and it's got to be just right. So we see that every single aspect of clothing in an ideal world has to be absolutely right. Now this for sure applies in our spiritual life, so that a person has to be careful that his spiritual garments are intact, and that refers to the garments that are generated through the keeping of the mitzvahs. So to explain how necessary these garments are, and all their completeness is crucial. It's explained in the Zohar, and is understood to everyone who is able to understand. The soul, the different levels of soul within a person, the lowest three levels are called nefesh, soul, ruach, spirit, neshama. In a person, hein bechinas nivroim, they are created. V'iyef shel shum nivra lahasig shum hasaga bevayrei v'yotza hakol ein sof baruch hu. It's impossible for a created being to understand anything about the Creator, who is called the Infinite One, Blessed Being. V'gam achrei asher heir Hashem mehoira yisporach, v'hetz bechinas yishtalshres madregas. Rabbis, Madregach Madrega. And even after God has separated from himself and injected into the chain system of creation all the different levels, one level after another, Bibchinas Simtsumim Atsumim, with great contractions of the godly light, Ulevushim Rabim Batsumim, and there are many great different garments, Hayudum Liodichain, who know the esoteric wisdom. So those that have learned the Kabbalistic teachings and the Hasidic teachings are fully au fait with the kind of levushim, garments, which the spiritual garments which are necessary to enclose the nefesh, ruach, and neshama. And v'nikroim be'idra rabba b'shem saris. So these eminences from God are also called saris. Saris means hair. Now why is it called hair? Because we know the hair grows from the head. And Hasidic teachings explain that the hair has got some connection with the brain. But we know that a brain is the most powerful tool which is able to think great thoughts. And a hair is a very modest sort of appendage to the body, and it doesn't seem to have any intelligence or any deep function at all. It's very nice, you know, to have nice hair, and you know, the women also would teach us how a person can think a great deal about their hair. But it nevertheless remains hair. It's almost dead. It's got a little bit of life to it. It does grow, but you can cut the hair without any pain, which shows that it's almost dead, but not quite totally dead. So why are these eminences from God called hair? The answer is because when you compare these eminences from God to the original from whence it came, that means God himself, you see that that which emanates from God is such a pale shadow of the origin from which it comes. It's therefore comparable to a hair compared to the brain. The hair is like a bit of a nebuch compared to the brain itself, right? Because the brain has got such power of, We don't. There's no end to the things the brain can do and think. And yet, this hair is still connected with the brain and is unable to do any of these things. So that gives us some idea of how little we are getting of godliness compared to the pool and the origin of godliness from which this emanation comes. And like it brings in the book of Daniel, which is written, much of it is written in Aramaic, it talks there about a vision of God. And it says, the hair of his head was like clean wool, clear wool. So how can God have hair? God doesn't have a body. How can we talk of him as having hair? And that's the answer. It's a mashal, it's a parable, referring to the emanations from God as comparable to the hair compared to the brain. But nevertheless, the soul and the ruach and the neshama are unable to bear the intensity of the light. It's so good and sweet, the sweetness of the godly light. It's very hard for the soul to bear this revelation. And that's even on the level of revelation of it just being hair. Meaning a very, very cut down and reduced revelation. As it says in Psalm 27, to look, you know, this is what I want to do, is to look upon the Noyam Hashem. This is the pleasantness of God. Loshen Imus, V'Arevus, Masikus, V'Tainug, Otzen, Lain Kates. This is an expression of pleasantness, sweetness, and another word for sweetness, and tremendous pleasure without end. A depth of pleasure which is hard to imagine for us. And it also writes another pasuk, then you will have pleasure with Hashem, or on Hashem. That's a pasuk which we say before we make Kiddush on Shabbos morning after davening. According to Lubavitch Nusach, at least it's a pasuk, I think it's in Yeshaya, and it says in Toshim Shabbos Haglecha Asayis Chetzcha B'David Dova, etc. In other words, if you will keep Shabbos in its perfect form, not even spoiling the atmosphere by discussing mundane things, then Oz Tisanik Al Hashem, then you will have tremendous pleasure on God, with God. In other words, it's a really indescribable experience of pleasure. And he's saying over here that even if we only have benefit and association with the reduced and cut down and contracted light which comes from God, we still are experiencing a tremendous experience of divine pleasure. V'hispia b'tzachtzachos Loshen Sachot Tzomi K'mosh Kosav B'Zohar, and this person will, his beer will have like satisfaction from the subtle pleasures which he experiences through experiencing this godly light. Vein b'kaycha l'kabel anehimus v'arevus ha-tzachtzachos sh'lai teitze min artikov v'tispatel mim etziyutze k'ner b'avuka. And the neshama is unable really to take the full intensity of this pleasure and sweetness and subtlety, that it will be unable to take the full intensity of it without like leaving its, literally means going out of its sheath and becoming annulled in its existence. Kener ba'avuka, like a flame in a torch. So what he's using the mashal of a flame in the torch is that the soul is called a ner, ner Hashem Nishmas Adam. So it's compared to a candle. Now if you hold a candle near to a large bonfire,
yeah,
if you can get near, then the candle flame, it won't exist as a separate entity from the bonfire. The flame of the candle will get drawn up into the larger and more powerful flame of the bonfire, and it will lose its own existence. And that is what will happen to the soul if it gets and has the experience of godliness to too great an extent, it's like being too near the flame of the candle, being too near the bonfire.
Right.
And it loses its own
Either identity.
It loses its own identity. Lishtava begufata malka. It just becomes coalesced with the main body of the king. That's referring, of course, to a spiritual entities. And it's saying that if the soul would experience too much the pleasure of like its oneness with the revelation of the godly light, it wouldn't be able to exist as an independent existence. So what he's saying is that we need some protection. So what is the protection? The protection of the soul, that it should not lose its existence and its identity when experiencing the sublime godly light, is that a God also creates a levush, a garment, for the created being, which has a similarity to the light that it is being protected from, and that will enclose the nefesh and the ruach and the shama in this garment, and it's through this garment that. And the garment is part, like, similar to the original light. Is tuchal lehones miziv arzeh? Then it's able to have benefit from this shining light. So somehow or other, the experience of this tremendously powerful divine light is able to be experienced if we have a levush. A levush is like a protection, like wearing sunglasses.
Yeah.
You can look, you don't look at the sun even with sunglasses, but no. The glare of the light of the sun is tolerable if you have sunglasses, but if the glare is too strong, your eyes can't take it. So in a certain sense, this is like a protective clothing to enable the person to experience this tremendous godly light. The light is part of mitzvusa, and therefore the soul will not lose its existence. Like a person that can look at the sun through a smoked glass. If a person looks through a glass which is clear, he'll see the sun. But in order to do that, he has to have a dampening or concealing aspect to it as well that will disable us from seeing too much of the light. That's why when you go for a pair of glasses, that enables you. You go for a pair of sunglasses, that it enables you to be in the sun, rather than being blinded by the tremendous brightness. Like it says about Moshe, that he went into the cloud when he went up on Ha-Sinai, Vayal al-Ha-Sinai. It was only because he was in the cloud that he was able to take the tremendous revelation. Shenislavish be'onon, he was enclosed in the cloud. Va'al avarah derech onon, and he went up and saw through the cloud, and it was remained with him in order to be his sunglasses. Like is brought in the Holy Zohar on page 210 and 229. We'll leave it there. Beaten by the clock again. And please God, we will continue next week.
Would you say there are the